My lords, ladies and gentlemen, master of the hounds, mistress of the ostler, father of the groom, stable boys, unstable boys, kinky girls, whippers in, whippers out. Fellow followers of the fox, members of the noble hunt who unfortunately cannot be with us today, please be upstanding and raise your stirrup cups. The toast is John Peel in his coat so gay.
We've all got his number, dear.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Jorrocks. With which I would like to couple round the hall.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Steph Barnett. And welcome to a rather special edition of Shout Out.
50 years ago today, the Sexual Offences Act of 1967 was passed.
We'll be finding out what it was.
And talking to a few people who grew up in the aftermath.
Or today.
Right here on Shout Out. Hello, one and all.
Good evening, everyone.
Slightly different entry to the show today. That was Round the Horn.
From 67?
Yeah, well, it ran from 65 to, I think, 69 or something like that. But that was kind of like an insert. And the reason I got it in is because Nick, who we were talking to later on, when I was talking to him pre the show about what he remembers from the era of when we're talking about, he said, and that was one of the things that you just heard everywhere. Mm. And it was a real stereotype of gay men. I mean, you heard there the yeah. laughing that
well,
it caused.
1967 yes. was that. Full of stereotypes, yeah. wasn't it?
Yeah. 70s was as well, wasn't it?
Mm. Yes.
And the 2010s, but it's okay because we're moving forward.
Slowly.
Yeah. One inch at a time.
So, hello all. Hello, Steph.
Hello. You all right?
Hello, Tara.
Hello.
Hello, Ella.
Hello.
So, how are we all?
All right, the weather, I've been in Bath all day, so the weather's
been
raining
down, yeah.
and sun and raining and sun.
Oh, we've had the same here over this side.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a big one of those spinny things with swings on it, a funfair thing outside my office at the moment, and all day long, every 5 minutes, all you can hear is kids screaming as it takes them up in the air and whirls
around.
Oh,
I thought you were
going
to tell
down.
Us they put it up just for you.
Oh, no, I'm intending to have a go, though. It should be good fun.
What do you call them? What, there's a name for them.
I don't know what they're called. You know what I mean? The swings that hang down off
off-chains.
Carousel type thing, and then it spins around, takes you up in the air, and gets faster. It's, there's one over in Millennium Square at the moment. Not Millennium Square, that's one along.
I love those things, although actually I'm really bad at getting scared on rides. I remember once a friend of mine tried to get me scared because it was one of those ones that drops you down, and we got to the top and she said the day that this one opened everyone started screaming at the top and they thought it was because people were having fun, but it turns out that was actually because all the safety bars lifted up and they were going to be dropped, and that was not going to end well. And we got to the bottom, we got dropped, you know, I screamed and everything. My friend looks at me and I said, yeah, that really helped, I found it really scary. And she looked at me and she said, Ella, your facial expression didn't change.
So now listen, I'm going to move us on very quickly because we're trying to make time in the show for the coverage that we're doing on the 50th anniversary of the decriminalisation of homosexuality. So I'm going to kick us straight off into Ouch Out, if you guys don't mind. So our pick of the events this week with Ella and Tara, which still kind of rhymes, doesn't it? It's not quite like Lara and Tara, but it'll do.
Don't make me feel welcome or anything.
You need to. I tell you what, I've got a pro forma to change your name.
Don't do it.
I keep forgetting we're calling you Minnie these days, aren't we?
No, you
the
are.
The Mooch, yeah. I think that's great. Everyone thought that was brilliant.
No, you did.
I did, yeah. So, sorry, guys. What are we talking about?
Okay, so, do you want me to start?
Well, yeah. Of course I do.
So what we have got is Arnold Feeney on Saturday. They've got summer cuts with Don't Tell Your Mother. And it's the... So LGBT's gone mainstream, isn't it?
Mm, so, Don't Tell Your Mother's a really popular night.
They are. I was there last... When the last event. So it was really a good night out, to be honest. So they've got... They're taking over Arnold Feeney. So they're the main players for 10 o'clock at night till 2 a.m.
Oh, nice.
Well, yeah.
I didn't realise the Arnold Feeney did events like that. It's
well, they're doing summer cuts pass... And they're doing what are they doing? They're showcasing Bristol's most loved and celebrated DJs and acts. And so it starts at 2 in the afternoon and it's free up until 10 p.m.
I'd also really like to point out that in their event description they've written, and I want to see if anyone can spot the thing here: expect glitter, pop bangers, sequins, delicious disco, glitter, rude R&B and all around glamour. Did anyone spot the thing?
Not, might thing. Not be stereotypical.
Well, the thing is that there was glitter twice in the list, and that is the kind of event that I can get behind.
Oh yeah, you said you don't. Yeah, Pride's full of glitter. Is it? Has it been removed yet?
No. Don't be ridiculous.
It's like when you put peanuts out on New Year's Eve, and you're still finding them in March down the back of the sofa or something. Oh, isn't
so,
it? Yeah.
So it's got
a confetti theme. Cannons do the same thing as well. Yeah.
So it's a pop horror. So it's supposed to be a horror night as well. So it's, you know, they always do a theme. It's always quite a good night out. And I don't know how much it is at the door.
I was thinking Halloween for horror.
No, but you've got to tell them more about this theme. This theme is amazing. They've set it up as, it's summer 85. It's time for the Hamilton High prom. However, the school is built on an ancient burial ground. A dead prom queen has just been reincarnated. And there is a serial killer stalking the halls. But the prom must go on.
Hang on. Arnold Feeney's built on a... Yeah. A burial grave?
I mean, to be fair, shock horror. Most places are. Like, that's the thing that you don't think about too much. I probably
there's
should
always somebody dead lying around.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's a lot of dead human beings around the planet since we started off, isn't there?
Yeah, we're everywhere. You know, you kick a rock and you hit a human these days.
There's too many that's one way of looking at
whatever
it.
There are so many billionaires.
Anyway, so it sounds like a good event. So horror and glitter and dead bodies. And, yeah. Go along. Don't tell your mother. It's a great night. It's really good. It's well worth going to anyway. So.
And the Arnold Feeney is a cool venue.
You
have to say that's quite a cool thing that they're doing.
Yeah, it's. I don't know what's happening with it. Last I heard, it lost some of its funding, hasn't it?
It has lost all its funding.
Lost all its funding, has it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So I don't know
if that's they're going to have to push it out and start making money. So it's part owned by UE as well, isn't it?
I think it's wholly owned by UE and rented.
Yeah.
I don't know. Perhaps we should actually ask them, get them on the show.
Well, I'll ask the UE. I posted on their website earlier, so... If you're listening,
apologies
UE,
if I got that wrong. I think that's right. Tell us, phone the studio now.
No, it is... To change pace entirely, there is something else that has been happening this week that is quite a big deal. And a third one, but I promise we'll mention that really quickly. But one is Wednesday 26th to Sunday 30th, so from yesterday till this Sunday, is the Queer Spirit Summer Festival is happening. So it's the second gathering of queer spiritual groups and individuals celebrating the passion, love and creative spirit of LGBTQI+ people.
All right, so where were we talking haunted stuff? When you said queer spirit, I was thinking of something haunting you and screaming in your ear or something. I didn't realise that was a kind of spirit you meant.
I did realise that there was a connection there, but you know, it's fine.
Bring more tie-dye.
So it's going to include ceremonies, rituals, workshops, discussions, yoga, tantra, shamanism, healing spaces, drumming and dancing, performance and cabaret and more. You can camp, you can bring your kids, but you do need tickets. You can't just roll up at the door. You do queer need to spirit. Get tickets.
Okay,
I'm going to come back as a queer spirit.
Oh my god, wait, did you ever hear the best ever theory online?
I'd love to. We're virtually out of time. If you want to do another event,
okay,
you need to save it for later.
No, she doesn't talk fast enough. You need to talk faster.
No one will catch the words. So we got Western Pride.
Oh yes, that's his weekend.
And we will be there.
Yeah, shout out's covering it. Yep. So next show will be handed over to Western Pride Records.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Tara is my better half. The best ever article was that there was a man who claimed that people were gay because they were possessed by ghosts. And he had scientific evidence.
Oh, okay.
In inverted commas, actually wrote an article.
I still like the fact that we can cause thunderstorms and
tornadoes, trans tornadoes.
Oh, is it? Right, okay, fair enough. Cool, thank you.
shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.
Now, this song's going to be quite removed from what we normally do, but it is being played for a very purposeful reason, so I'll tell you afterwards.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's a Plaisir d'Amour.
Oh, well, 1927.
It was,
lovely,
yes.
Accent.
Yeah, that's Beryl Cormann and Jennifer Partridge, that one. I don't think it was actually... the song was originally written in 1927. And the significance of that is... I played that because we played that when we did the Alan Turing special a while back.
Of course we did, yes.
And it was one of the backing tracks. And loads of people wrote in asking what the track was. So that's that. And the reason it was in that is because it's from 1927, which was the year Alan Turing was born. And, of course, central to part of our story that we're doing today, of course, Alan Turing was one of the most famous people now that we know of that was quite badly treated as a result of something.
Caught under the Sexual Offences Amendment Act, the Criminal Law Amendment Act.
Yeah, so now Terry and Ivan are in with us. Hello, boys.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Helps if I put the right mic up.
That's
sorry,
nice. Good evening again.
Now, I didn't realise... We're talking about... it is the 50th anniversary of the decriminalisation or partial decriminalisation of homosexuality.
Homosexuality,
which makes it sound like it's a wonderful thing, but it wasn't quite as good as it sounded.
Yeah,
but before we go there,
go on.
I didn't realise that the law against homosexuality went all the way back to 1533.
Actually, it's buggery, not homosexuality. So
right.
I guess that.
But it was mainly used to prosecute.
Yeah.
People that we would now term as gay or bisexual males. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to go back into history as to where all of this comes from, good book is called Policing Sex and Desire and Sex and Punishment by Eric Berkowitz,
right.
Who is a Jewish scholar and looks at how the taboos of one ancient tribe came to control the whole of Christendom and Islam as well, whereas the very ancient cultures, of course, were quite tolerant of same-sex behaviour, as we've talked about with Ella. In our history section before. But the ecclesiastical courts dealt with male homosexuality in the Middle Ages, and then it was codified into secular law as an offence by the Buggery Act of 1533, which is just such a wonderful early modern Tudor period.
It's a horrible
name.
Word,
the Buggery
though,
Act.
Isn't it, buggery?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
as
it was mentioned in Bridget Jones, the first movie.
Yeah.
Because he said, "I've just committed an illegal act on you, Bridget Jones."
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So now, of course, where do we want to go from there? Because, I mean, there's an awful lot that went on between there and the 50 years ago.
Absolutely. So what happened is in 1861, the death penalty for anal sexual intercourse, which was mainly used for prosecuting gay men, was abolished and replaced with life imprisonment. However, fellatio, masturbation and other acts of non-penetrative sex remained lawful. So between 1861 and 1885, there was a kind of period when some gay sex was perfectly legal. Then comes the killer. It's called the Labouchere Amendment to the Criminal Law Amendment Act of 1885, passed by Parliament on August the 7th, 1885, and the work of Henry Labouchere, who was a Liberal MP. And that criminalised all sexual contact between men. It criminalised soliciting for sex. It criminalised all relationships between men. And that remained on the statute books until, 50 years ago today, July the 27th, 1967.
I like that term that you've put, heterosexual dictatorship had begun.
That was coined, and there's a book by Patrick Higgins, I think it's Patrick Higgins, the historian, called Heterosexual Dictatorship, which looks at the lives of gay and bi men between 1885 and 1967.
Right. And of course, it was very famously used to punish people like Oscar Wilde and, as we were talking about, Alan Turing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were both prosecuted under that law.
And there was another famous case called the Montague case,
right.
Which involved Lord Montague of Bewley, who founded the Transport Museum down at Yeovilton.
Oh, I wondered if there was a connection.
Yeah,
there.
And also that involved a guy called Peter Wildblood, who was a gay journalist, and a couple of RAF servicemen. Now, the RAF servicemen gave evidence against Lord Montague and Peter Wildblood. But what surprised the authorities in pursuing a case against those guys is that the public attitudes had changed from the time of Oscar Wilde, when there was a great, homophobic witch hunt hysteria. And many people were saying, well, in actual fact, sex between two guys, you know, what's the problem? It's consenting adults doing it in private, you know, what's the issue? So by the 1950s, attitudes had changed.
I should point out there was a very good documentary on the BBC last night, which was all about that and
the Montague case.
It'll be on iPlayer. It's well worth having a watch. It was fascinating to watch.
So out of the Montague case came Peter Warblood's book called Against the Law, in which he was perhaps the first person in the public eye to come out as gay, and he wrote about the gay subculture of the time and advocated for reform. And the Conservative government, as many governments do when dealing with complex issues, is they set up a committee under Sir John Wolfenden, whose own son Jeremy was gay, by the way.
I presume he knew that.
He did. Although he was very kind of cautious about things. He's very uncomfortable about it himself, so it's said. And indeed, he referred to homosexuals as Huntleys and prostitutes as Palmers. So the ladies writing the, you know, the secretaries taking the notes of the committee wouldn't have to write homosexual or prostitute. It's a very strange situation.
Such a different time, wasn't it? Now, very of course, Wolfenden is a name that anyone that's ever looked at the history in the 50 years, Wolfenden just pops up time and time again.
That's right, yeah.
But what was it that
happened? He recommended, his report recommended, that homosexuality between adult males be decriminalised. But the Conservative government of Harold Macmillan didn't want to pursue this very far. So it kind of rested for about 10 years, during which time the gay community
took a long time to do anything about it, didn't they?
And during those years, there was a group called the Homosexual Law Reform Society, whose secretary was Anthony Gray, and he wrote a book. Actually, it's, you can still find copies in secondhand bookshops, called Quest for Justice, which looks at the struggles of that period. And incidentally, John Wolfenden came 45th in a list of the top 500 lesbian and gay heroes in a poll for the Pink Paper in 1997. Anyway, we move forward to the mid-60s. Labour's now in power. A lot of people assume that the reforms came actually from the Labour government. They didn't really.
No.
It came from Lord Arran, a Conservative peer, and an MP who was Labour, a Welsh Jewish Labour MP called Leo Abbs, who were to these two guys steered a private members' bill through Parliament. Now, Leo Abbs was a very flamboyant man. He dressed rather like John Pertwee when he was in Doctor Who, all velvet, crushed velvet, and all this kind of stuff. A real dandy, and he came from the safe seat, or represented the safe seat of Pontypool, so he could champion sort of what was considered maverick causes. And he introduced the bill into Parliament, and with the support of the Home Secretary Roy Jenkins and some of those Labour MPs who'd been elected in the Labour landslide of 1966, the Sexual Offences Act of 1967 was passed.
It's very easy to say that the government gave us the equality. I read a very interesting thing on one of the newspapers where they said they may have passed the law, but it was actually the thousands of LGBT people that fought for it that actually helped to get it passed.
And,
but it still wasn't equal, was it? Because things like, I remember, I mean, I came out at 18 and the age of consent was 18, and it had only just come down from 21.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, Peter Tatchell wrote an essay for The Independent a few days ago, and I do recommend visiting Peter's website, because it's a great review of how the Sexual Offences Act didn't change things, and how in some cases the police actually were redoubled their efforts to prosecute gay men who fell outside the law. And, you know, sex in hotels, in student halls of residence, remained totally illegal.
You had to be two men in private
behind
no
locked
one
door.
Else in the house.
Absolutely. The 67 reform applied to only England and Wales. It wasn't extended to Scotland until 1980, and Northern Ireland until 1982. And some listeners might remember Reverend Ian Paisley with his Save Ulster from Sodomy campaign, which was the birth of the Democratic Unionist Party, which we've all spoke about in recent weeks as propping up the Conservative government of Theresa May. So Peter Tatchell's calculated that by 1974, the arrests of gay men for gross indecency, which remained on the statute books, had risen 400% from 1967. So many police forces were determined still to prosecute gay men. They were an easy pickings. Easy pickings.
Oh. It's worthwhile pointing out that this whole decriminalisation thing, this wasn't some big panacea and a wonderful thing to happen to gay men. It was brought in so that gay men were no longer decriminalised, but they could be treated. In other words, being gay was still seen as being an illness.
Yeah.
So it was, but one thing it did do was slightly open the debate, allowed gay groups like the Gay Liberation Front, founded in the autumn of 1970, to take place, and gradually self-advocacy comes in and we begin to change public attitudes. But it's a long process.
Cool. Well, we're going to be finding out what it was actually like growing up in that era. Yeah. But we'll be back in a sec with the news.
The Shout Out Podcast.
And that's Diana by Paul Anka.
It was number one for an awful long time.
Yes. It was number one when the Wolfenden Report was published.
But it was also number one from August the 25th till October the 26th in 1957.
Yes. Wow.
They don't do that anymore.
You'd have got bored of hearing that, wouldn't you? So.
Unless you're Ed Sheeran, of course.
Ooh,
ooh,
ouch.
Ooh.
Wow.
Someone's been doing the Paul breakfast show a lot. So yeah, so no, that's the connection. We've got kind of connections with all of our songs.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
If you remember that, at the time, that was when the Wolfenden Report was being published.
Being published, so. That was 57, that's 60 years ago.
Yes, yeah. So yeah. Now, more modern day, let's get the latest news headlines.
Is Shout Out News on Thursday, the 27th of July.
In a series of tweets Wednesday, US President Donald Trump stated that transgender individuals will no longer be allowed to serve in any capacity in the US military. He cited tremendous medical costs and disruption as the two reasons for the ban. It's not yet clear how the ban will affect the estimated 15,000 trans personnel currently on active service. Joe Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said today that there will be no modifications to the current policy until the president's direction has been received by the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary has issued implementation guidance.
The Irish World newspaper reports that a man who is tipped as a future pope has made an important conciliatory series of remarks about gay and bisexual people, others in same-sex relationships, and heterosexuals who remarry after divorce. The Archbishop of Vienna, Christoph Schoenberg, says that the world has moved on rapidly and that the dignity of gay people and divorcees should be met with compassion and mercy by the Roman Catholic Church. It has been observed by many observers of Vatican politics that the current pope, Francis, who is a Jesuit and has experience of the socially campaigning church in South America, is a welcome change from the divisive and conservative policies pursued by his predecessors.
Two incarnations of the BBC television Time Lord, Doctor Who, have clashed at a comic convention over the appointment of Jodie Whittaker as the 13th iteration of the Good Doctor. At a packed symposium, Peter Davison, who played the fifth incarnation of Who between 82 and 84, and also found fame in All Creatures Great and Small and Campion, remarked that he felt slightly sad that a woman had been cast in the role, on the grounds that a female Doctor would no longer be a role model for boys growing up. Davidson's successor in the role, the sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, was quick to shut down his colleague, telling him that it was not at all necessary for boys to have a male role model. Peter, in this case, you're talking absolute rubbish, said Mr. Baker.
Debbie Hayton, who is on the National LGBT Committee of the Trade Union Congress, strikes a conciliatory tone in the daily communist paper Morning Star, where she has written of her experience of being a trans woman and looks at proposals for further government reform in the area of trans rights. Hayton believes that there are still questions that need to be answered about the balance between trans rights and women-only spaces. She also addresses herself to the plethora of identities grouped together under the broad banner of queer, including asexual, intersexed, and gender fluid. And she argues that we should be wary of creating new labels that can be used to oppress people and instead advocate for individual liberty instead.
Benjamin Davis from the LGBT Jewish network Keshet UK writes in the long-standing weekly paper, The Jewish Chronicle, about his feelings over the organisers of Chicago Dyke March, who banned people from marching with banners containing the Star of David, an emblem both of Jewish identity and sometimes of Zionism, the political ideology of which the Dyke March stewards are opposed. We won't get into a debate here about the intersection of differing political agendas on the LGBT communities, but we have linked to Davis's essay on our website so you can read for yourself his response.
The new issue of the Spark magazine is out now and available from outlets throughout the Shoutout region. Founded in 1993, it will appeal to LGBTQ people interested in psychology, spirituality and ecology. One of the groups profiled this issue is Cycle Out, the gay and trans cycling group affiliated to the Gay Outdoor Club. The Spark notes that there are two rides a week throughout the summer months, with some open to lesbian women only. For further details, visit their website, which we have linked to.
And finally, the out gay leader of the Conservative Party in Scotland, Ruth Davidson, has joined with the Dogs Trust and Kennel Club to promote an awareness of canine welfare issues amongst members of the Scottish Parliament. According to the magazine of the Dogs Trust, Davidson was also asked to judge the Holyrood Dog of the Year competition, which this year was won by Maya, a border collie, and her owner, Emma Harper, MSP.
Woof. For these news stories and more from the LGBT universe, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Ivan Jackson
and Terry Starr.
Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
Shoutout,
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
I don't know if that song needs any introduction, does it?
No, I got the original of that. Have 45,
you?
Yeah.
Oh, 40. Oh, you're talking record, aren't you? Gosh.
Is there anything else?
Well, they have these modern Fandango things called CDs, and now it's all digital and comes off a key, doesn't it? So anyway, that is The Beatles and All You Need Is Love, which was the number one on in 1967 when the law that we're talking about today passed. So I'm guessing, do you all remember that playing back those?
I do.
I do.
You do? Yeah. So I should say welcome. We've got Nick, Roger and Nigel all joining us. Now, normally you don't ask a gentleman their age, but to give our audience a kind of idea, because we're talking, it's 50 years since the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality. How old were you when the law was passed? Can I start with you, Nick?
I was 13 going on 14.
I was 11.
And I was 10.
So let's just give the audience an idea of kind of you know the age you were. So it probably was most effective with not effective most affected with you. I would say wouldn't you?
It was. I was aware of the issue of homosexuality. My parents were very liberal minded and quite good with teaching us about sex education, but even so, homosexuality was something, it was an illness to be cured, and the change in the law was just about treating an illness by medically instead of
were you aware of your sexuality at that point?
Well, I had some homoerotic wet dreams by then, and I learnt self-censorship at a very early age.
So I'm assuming it was, I mean, because it was still the same for me in the 90s, there was no sexual education about being homosexual at all,
No.
Was it? I mean, was there any kind of teaching about it, or was it kind of, it's just wrong, it's mental health? Was that even something that was even talked about back then?
It seemed to be the progressive view that it should be treated medically, not by putting people in prison.
Right, but I'm guessing it wasn't something that was like, you know, taught as a medical condition at school, and like it was more of an adult kind of conversation, I presume, was it? Mm-hmm. So,
Nigel, can I ask you the same question? Were you aware of when the law was changed?
No, I was 10, so I think a 10-year-old these days is a lot better informed than perhaps than we were. And, I existed in a household where that sort of thing wouldn't have been discussed. The fact that there'd been a change in the law about homosexuality, why would my parents be talking about that? It wasn't talked about.
Right. What were their beliefs? Do you know? Very Christian orientated.
Yes, they were. I was brought up in a very Methodist family. There are things Methodists can't cope with: drink, alcohol, homosexuality, and divorce. And my parents, bless them, had two boys, and each of us qualified in one of those departments. So yeah, that wasn't the best way to grow up, I would think.
Were you part of a large family?
Two boys, so
okay.
In the big scheme of things, probably not.
What about you, Roger? What's your kind of first recollection of when the law that would have passed back then kind of would have affected your life? I'm assuming it was when you went through adolescence, or was it when you were?
No, it was. I remember it as. I lived in a very political household and I didn't have a bedtime. And so I listened, you know, I heard all the news programs at night. And I can remember this term, Blackmailer's Charter. And it's the discussions I heard at home was, this has only happened so the queers in the House of Lords and whatever don't get chased by, I don't know what they called rent boys then. You know, it was like that, and I guess day-to-day life, it didn't really make any difference. Although another boy at school was very aware of it and did a kind of psycho-cruelty thing on me.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah,
lovely.
It's really
nice. We know, because I don't know if you've seen, but there's an awful lot of articles gone up today on lots of different newspapers. One of those that I was reading earlier was one that Peter Tatchell had commented on The Independent, and he was saying that after that, from there till about the mid-70s, the arrest rate shot up by like more than 300 to 400%, depending on which numbers you go for. Around, I'm guessing, the 70s, you were starting. Were most of you realising that you were gay and starting to date and that kind of thing? What kind of effect did it have? What was life like back then? Did nightclubs exist like they do now, where you could go to, or was it still very underground? Or?
Not in Bristol, no.
No,
there was a nightclub at Severn Beach, and there was one room at the back of the Ship on Park Road, and there was a pub called the Garrick's Head. Had a room at the back, but it was raided by the police. Some people got.
And that was, from what I understand, that was quite a common thing, wasn't it? The police did like to just turn up and raid somewhere. But what was their reasoning for doing so? Because if homosexuality was legal, why would they be able to raid a pub?
For the same reason they used to raid the dugout, because they didn't want certain people, certain groups, to be in certain places. Oh, sorry, do you know what the dugout is?
No, I don't. That was going to be my next question.
Sorry. It was a nightclub on Park Row, and people to going there from St. Paul's. It was like originally a very student-y, hippie place, and then it became sort of dominated by black music, and it became a place to go, and the police weren't happy about it, so they discouraged a certain group of people from going there, and I think it was the same with gay people.
And they just literally just turn up and kind of raid the place?
Well, they needed, look, we're here, and don't get too comfortable, because we run this, and it might be just as well if you don't care. People didn't like it. I mean, legislation doesn't make people any nicer. You know, not immediately anyway, in my experience.
Nicholas, were you out in the clubs?
I didn't come out properly till the late 70s. I grew up in a very small village, and there was not much. There was just the village pub, and that was it. By the time I went to university, that was early 70s, you could see one good effect of the change in the law, in that gay societies could exist openly and in universities and be funded. Prior to that, it would have been illegal. So I was still not fully out of the closet.
That's strange hearing that. I mean, ironically, one of our slogans used to be out of the closet and into your ears. But the whole phrase out of the closet is kind of quite died down now. Was it quite a common thing to say back then?
Yes, definitely.
Well, to read.
Or to read.
Yeah, because, I mean, the discourse wasn't in everyday life in the same way.
It's Sorry, Nick, I was interrupting you then. Yes. It's an expression I haven't heard for a while. So,
what really changed things? I think there were things like the law. 2 years after the law change in 1967, the Stonewall riot happened. That was in New York. But it put gay liberation on the agenda. And it was really only then that the term gay became used. It wasn't really much before then. And then throughout the 70s, obviously, there was more about it. And the big change for me, actually, was getting involved with the Anti-Nazi League in the late 70s, because the first carnival against the Nazis in London in 1978 involved black artists and white artist, and also of a very well-known at the time gay artist, Tom Robinson. And he sung his hit single, Glad to Be Gay. And I was at this in Victoria Park in Hackney with thousands of people singing along, singing If You're Glad to Be Gay. And I'm sure quite a lot of them were straight, actually. But the atmosphere was tremendous. And shall we say, I went to the carnival as a sexually confused young man, and I came away a slightly less sexually confused one.
Nicely put. So, Nigel, did you ever attend anything like the prides that were going on back in the 70s?
Or? Yeah, that was... I think probably because I was still at home with my parents, pride things were things that I certainly wouldn't have been encouraged, or even, you know, the awareness. It would be something you see on television, and you think, oh yes, I wonder whether I'll ever get involved with anything like that. And then I got involved with a group of people who were very sexually aware and well focused, and. Almost mentored me in my sort of early years when I came out. So yeah, from then onwards, one did Pride and one did clubs and went to events like that. So
did any of you get involved with the miners' strike protests and support for them?
I was around at the time, and I knew a lot of the people involved. And I think if circumstances had been different, some actor might have played my part in the movie Pride. But it shows how things were very double-edged, because at the time of the miners' strike, I was in a relationship with a single parent who was in the process of getting divorced and seeking custody of his child, who was about 8 years old at the time. His ex, the mother of the child, wasn't disputing it. She knew about us. That wasn't the problem. But the problem was the courts and the social services, because if we'd been open about our relationship, it would have seriously jeopardised his chances of gaining custody. I mean, that seems inconceivable now. But it's a source of regret that I couldn't get involved as much as I would have liked to because of these issues that were going on at the time.
But I still remember, even into the 90s and probably early noughties, if you were in Parliament or the like, or something to do with government, and you came out, the first thing you did was you resign, because it was still kind of quite frowned on.
Yeah, you wouldn't have, like the Keith Vaz scenario, I don't think it could have happened then, really.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it would have.
It's an interesting thing to think about, but what it must have been like back then. So when do you...
Well, it was wrong. It was incredibly charged, you know. It's very new that people just talk about it and it doesn't matter. And it seems to be...
You mean being gay? It's...
Yeah, oh, sorry, yeah, yeah. Yeah, gay issues, gay anything. Suddenly, among the young people, it was so what? But it wasn't like that. It was... When it was mentioned, like, everyone would get tense, and you may end up with a broken nose.
So,
you know. And also at that time, you know, it had been going on for ages and ages and ages. You know, you change the law, you can't expect people's opinions to change.
No.
Did any of you get involved with the police at any point?
No, although I didn't care about it. I didn't care, sort of. I was well under 21. I must have been 15. When I first
started. I mean, to avoid the police, you know, people like us, you know, would be very wary, for example, of going to a public toilet.
Mm. Yes, because
that was a real big issue. And
again, I know, because we interviewed Peter Tatchell, and he was saying that around that time, what they did basically was they started to entrap gay men in, and it was known as cottaging, wasn't it? Look for sex in a public toilet. But I know that they as a backlash, Peter Tatchell launched a campaign where they actually put posters up with the faces of the police, so that gay men knew what they looked like.
Yeah, we used to refer to them as pretty police.
Oh, right, okay. Yes, I had heard it was supposed to be the younger ones that were more likely to attract other men. But it seems
I often wonder how the police forces actually managed to get the younger, prettier.
Yes, Quentin Crisp used to say, we can only imagine what kit inspection would have been like before they went out.
So it's fascinating to hear a kind of what it was like, and it's very interesting to hear that you think it's so recent that things have got so much more equal.
I don't know. Maybe it's just little pockets where it just doesn't matter anymore.
So I think the chief of police in certain areas makes a lot of difference. Because we noticed in Bristol when there was a change in chief superintendent, attitudes in policing changed almost overnight.
Mm. Right, okay. I mean, it is. I do remember I came out in 1996 and I still remember the Don't Go Here Because It's Being Raided posters that were being put up by people like THT at the time. So I can't recall the last time I saw one of those. So it must have been around the kind of time that you're talking about. So.
I mean, you know, there is. I can remember talking to somebody in a club one night and saying, oh, you know, this guy was somebody who used to go out cottaging and cruising quite a lot. And he said to me, I was out cruising the other night, and he mentioned the particular area. And he said, I started playing with this guy, and then all of a sudden there was a policeman there. Mm. And we both stopped and we both looked, and the policeman said, just making sure everything's okay here, lads, just carry on. And went away. Completely unheard of. I mean, ordinarily you'd have your collar felt and you'd be away.
Gosh, a different world to 50 years ago, isn't it? Finally, before we wrap up, can I ask, out of the three of you, are any of you married?
No.
No, but
partnered? I'm interested to know, when you first came out, did you ever think that we would have marriage equality like we do now?
No.
But the whole idea was completely inconceivable.
Yeah.
Be married to another man. Mm. That was just never thought of or entertained.
Cool. Well, listen, it's been lovely to talk to you. I've got so many questions come through my head that I want to ask, but we're so out of time. We're going to have to move on. But it's lovely to hear it, and it's really good. I hope you're kind of, you know, happy with the way equality's going. To say that we're there yet, I think would be a complete and utter lie, wouldn't it? I think you'd all agree. But compared to what it was like 50 years ago, I hope some of the younger listeners that we have can get a kind of understanding of what it might have been like being their age 50 years ago. So anyway, a big thank you to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do stay with us. We will be back in a sec. You're listening to Shout Out.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Fascinating talking about that kind of time. It amazes me to. I mean, I do remember when I came out in 1996. My mum was worried, and when I said, "Why are you worried?" She said, "It's not because you're gay." She said, "I'm just worried that you're going to be treated badly and not have the quality of life you deserve." And that was kind of
a lot of people's experience.
Yeah, 1996. Yeah. That was. So
yeah, it's interesting. Also, the focus now has moved away. You know, since 1967, it's moved away from this focus on sexual acts or sexual activity to more to a human rights issue that LGBT people. That involve things like, you know, adoption and marriage, etc. So it's great it's moved away from this sort of sex focus thing.
Especially after the Sexual Offences Act of 2003 swept away a lot of the anti-gay legislation.
I should explain, by the way, that song was My Love by Route 94, which you'll probably recognise as quite a modern song. That's from 2014, and that is when marriage equality was passed. That was the number one.
Only the last couple of years.
So there you go.
And by the way, we're not ignoring women's issues either, because gay women in relationships also suffered as much as men, although they weren't as visible because they weren't being arrested necessarily, but they were being beaten, being tortured, electric shock therapy, so that was all going on as well.
We must mention does
get forgotten. Women were suffering just as much.
Yeah, interestingly, though, it was never illegal, was it, to my knowledge? Is that right?
Not in British law.
Not from
English. But women could be persecuted for other things, you know, like witchcraft, for example.
Yeah.
Well, if you go back far enough.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, good point, Ivan. And a lot of lesbian women actually appeared on, because it wasn't illegal, you know, sex between women wasn't illegal, they appeared on programmes like BBC Panorama and the Brains Trust and all those sorts of shows to advocate for gay law reform, because they're homosexual brothers and brothers couldn't do that, if you see what I mean.
And don't forget, because they had their children taken as well, away as well, some of these women as well. So they lost their not only their families, but their children as well.
Yeah.
I think that things have moved on a lot, but I think the transgender community are lagging slightly now.
Yes.
That's very much where the focus of a lot of activism is now, is transgender, intersexed, and the wider queer issue, should we say, as the younger people call themselves.
And of course it's saddening to see how quick our rights can be taken away, as well as we've seen what's been going on in the US.
Absolutely, with Trump and his tweeting yesterday.
I still can't believe he's trying to run a country by Twitter.
I think we can all believe it now, can't we, because we've seen it so long.
And he doesn't even actually ask the people that he says he's asked before he says that he's asked them. Is that make
clearly
sense?
Not.
That really didn't make much sense.
Clearly not.
So, you know what I mean?
It'll be interesting to see how this pans out, and I've got a feeling in me waters that actually this is going to backfire.
Yes, that'd be very interesting. So anyway, that is it for this week, but I'm sure today's subject is a show we're going to visit again. But for now though, if you want to know more, head over to our website.
That's at shoutoutradio.lgbt, which is also where you can let us know your thoughts.
Join us next week when we'll be bringing you everything that is Western Pride.
Yeah, and see you Saturday. Yes. I'll be there.
Yes, and we'll see you next week from myself and the team. Let's say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.